Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and to give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 08-3064, United States of America versus Kevin Quattlebaum, appellant. Ms. Blackwood for the appellant, Mr. Oystriker for the appellee.
May it please the court, my name is Amy Blackwood. With me at counsel's table is Douglas Baer. Together, we represent Kevin Quattlebaum, the appellant in this case. We're here today because the district court made an erroneous ruling on probable cause at the suppression hearing. That erroneous ruling resulted in the submission of evidence at trial that should have been excluded. The district court ruled that there was probable cause of a traffic violation. District of Columbia regulations require that when making a left turn, one use a turn signal if that turn may affect other traffic.
What was said to preserve this argument?
Your Honor, defense counsel in their joint motion to suppress argued that the stop was unlawful because no traffic violation had occurred.
But that was because he denied not making a signal.
Your Honor, that is correct.
But this is a different argument.
No, Your Honor, I would submit that this is...
Well, there are at least two reasons why no violation might have occurred, right? Because there are two elements to the offense.
That's correct.
And he argued one element was lacking.
That's correct.
That was a denial, just a contradiction in the testimony, and the officer was credited.
Your Honor,
did he argue the other element was lacking?
Your Honor, the defense counsel did not argue that the other element was lacking. However,
that's what you're arguing now.
Yes, Your Honor, and I would submit to you that under U.S. versus Mitchell in this court, the defense counsel's statement in their joint motion to suppress was sufficient to preserve this.
Okay, what was that statement?
Your Honor, as to the defendant Zollicoffer in that case, defense counsel had stated that there was no warrant at issue there, and nor had any ever been requested. This court found that met...
Are you moving away from the no traffic violation?
No, Your Honor. I'm just stating that under U.S. versus Mitchell, this was preserved. Your Honor, in this case, the district court ruled that there was probable cause. We are simply continuing that argument here.
Well, if it wasn't preserved, can we review it at all? I mean, even for plain error?
Yes.
Under Rule 12, if it's not raised at the proper time, it's waived.
That's certainly correct, Your Honor. But in
this case, it's particularly important because the failure to raise it at the proper time prevented the government and the district court from dealing with the issue that you now discuss.
Well, Your Honor, first of all, I submit that it was raised because the court was asked to rule on probable cause. The definition of the crime here was pursuant to 2204.3. The government cited the regulations in their opposition, and so it was before the court.
Let me focus on that question. If it wasn't raised, can we review this for plain error?
Your Honor, if it wasn't raised, it can be reviewed for plain error in this court's discretion, yes, because it certainly affected my client's substantial rights. And
on that question, I'm curious whether an issue related to the exclusionary rule could ever constitute something that rose to the level of plain error, because you're tried based on probative in a fair trial with probative evidence. It wouldn't seem like an exclusionary rule violation could ever meet the Alano test.
Your Honor, I'm not sure that I totally understand your question. Would you mind rephrasing it?
Well, can an exclusionary rule violation ever so seriously affect the integrity of the proceedings as to constitute plain error?
Certainly, Your Honor, I believe that it can. First of all, in this case, admission of the evidence basically lowered the government's burden of proof at the suppression hearing. We're in a situation where we don't have a warrant, and it's therefore the government's burden to show probable cause. Lacking that, the district court's ruling nonetheless allowed evidence that was the sole basis of conviction for my client.
Let's assume there was probable cause to stop the automobile for a traffic violation. But what you're concerned with is the search that ensued of the automobile, right? And what I'd like you to address is whether, if at all, the Supreme Court's decision this Tuesday in Arizona versus Gantt has any effect on your position in this case.
Your Honor, no. To the extent we are primarily concerned with the stop here, we haven't argued that.
Was the search incident to an arrest here?
No, Your Honor, the search was based on probable cause for the smell of marijuana.
Well, I thought this, but it was? Wasn't your client in handcuffs before the marijuana was?
He was, Your Honor, yes.
So are you claiming that he was arrested when he was put in handcuffs and taken away?
We are claiming to the extent
that was before any marijuana was.
Okay. Well, Your Honor, he was still at the scene after he was in handcuffs. He wasn't taken away. But to the extent that this court were to find that he was arrested at that point, we would certainly argue that under Gantt, the ensuing search was unlawful, yes.
But it has. But the Supreme Court's decision deals with incident to arrest, a search. It's the old Chimmel case. And the theory behind it was that the individual who is in the car still can reach and get a gun or something. And the Supreme Court said that no. If you've got that guy in handcuffs, I mean it's ridiculous. He's not going to go anywhere, mm-hmm. right? So
right.
Your guy was in handcuffs. So the question then becomes, was the search here incident to the arrest? Assuming that putting somebody in handcuffs arrests him.
Assuming that putting Mr. Quattlebaum in handcuffs arrested him at that point, the search was incident to his arrest here, and under Gantt, it is now unlawful. Yes,
It wasn't just a purely protective search of the car here, right? It was the smell of marijuana that justified the search of the car, I thought.
Yes, Your Honor, but under Judge Randolph's questioning, the defendants would have been arrested prior to the smell of the marijuana.
So you claim they were illegally arrested?
Yes, Your Honor. We claim that they were illegally arrested at the point that the progress of the truck was stopped and they were put in handcuffs.
That's another one that wasn't raised in the district court, though.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Yeah. Okay. On that question, don't our precedents hold that putting someone in handcuffs during a car stop, doesn't equate to it being a de facto arrest? We have a lot of cases on that, Lang, Clark.
Your Honor, there are, but under those cases, the officer must have a personal reasonable fear for his own safety. And
I did. He said, your client was big and I'm old.
Well, you know, Your Honor, that's very close to what he did say, and he wasn't looking to arm wrestle him, but Your Honor, I would submit that is absolutely not a fear of safety. In fact, that's Sergeant Neal testifying that he handcuffed him out of convenience, and under Lang, that wouldn't support the use of the increased force here. I noticed that I have moved into my rebuttal time. I had saved 3 minutes for rebuttal. If the court has no further questions at this time, I will reserve.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I'm Stephen A. Stryker on behalf of the United States. Turning first to Judge Kavanaugh's questions about preservation of the issue, I think in this case, you don't really need to resolve whether this was waiver or plain error, because under either standard, I think Mr. Quattlebaum loses. And that is because
the government's position that a exclusionary rule mistake can ever be plain error.
I don't know the answer to that in the broad run of cases. I think it would be very difficult under the Supreme Court's recent decisions in Herring and Hudson. And certainly in this case and on these facts, there's...
Right, the language in Herring and Hudson would suggest no, I would think.
I think that's probably right. But I would hesitate to try to imagine a circumstance. I think you could probably come up with a hypothetical maybe where the facts were really egregious. In this case, I don't think...
A pistol whipping case.
Perhaps. But certainly on these facts, I think you see some suggestion from Mr. Quattlebaum the officers here were reckless. There's certainly no evidence of recklessness in this record. First of all, as to the stop itself, Mr. Quattlebaum says the record is devoid of evidence that this stop or this turn of Mr. Williams has affected other traffic. There is evidence of that. We know that it's 4:20 p.m. on a Friday afternoon at rush hour. And we know actually from Officer Fultz's trial testimony, and you'll see this at pages 395 to 396 of the transcript. He says, I handcuffed Mr. Williams because I was afraid he might flee. And we all know that the traffic on 17th Street where this occurred is a heavily trafficked area. So, and also this was a left turn.
Did you say that or are you saying that?
I'm saying that Officer Fultz said that in the transcript.
He said that's a heavily trafficked area?
Yeah. Well, he says, and actually I have it right here. He says the traffic that's out there, the vehicles that are on 17th, we all know that vehicles travel heavy. It's not something we've cited in our brief, but I would just point it out for the court's edification that there is evidence in there. In any event, this certainly can't be an obvious error under the plain error standard because there's no case law discussing 2204.3. This is not a heavily litigated regulation. And Mr. Quattlebaum doesn't cite you to any case that supports his interpretation. And I would also note, turning back to whether the issue was preserved, he never in the district court cited the regulation at any point. The government cited 2204.4 but said the failure to signal would be a traffic violation.
Just the traffic violation. Tell me what if an individual is driving down the street and fails to put on a turn signal, your position is the police can stop that individual, order them out of the car and handcuff them?
Not handcuff them. Not unless on you have facts as you have here under Lange and White suggesting you're in a high crime zone. You have some evidence, at least from Officer Durham's testimony, that there was a drug deal before this. We don't contend that rose to the level of reasonable.
Counting things in the car.
Right. The most important fact that Sergeant Neal had when he's approaching the vehicle was that Mr. Quattlebaum was starting to get out of the vehicle apparently without being asked to do so, and then threw what appeared to be narcotics on the ground and stepped on them. That suggests perhaps an attempt to flee.
Something on the ground. I don't know if it appears to be narcotics.
Well, Sergeant Neal testified that he thought it was consistent with narcotics. And also what you have Mr. Williams, the driver, reaching down with his right hand toward what would be the console, and there are furtive gestures in the vehicle. Those are also under Lange and White probative facts that suggest the officers might be in danger. And I think Mr. Quattlebaum overreads the transcript when he says this was a matter of convenience. The government was never given cause to ask Sergeant Neal the question of whether he was in fear subjectively, but that's not, under this court's decision in Holmes, that's not relevant. The relevant question is whether all these circumstances objectively could give rise to a safety concern. And finally...
Doesn't Gant call into question some the safety concern once the person is handcuffed, as Judge Randolph was suggesting?
That's true, and actually I would submit that Gant has no effect on this case for a couple of reasons. First, this was not a search incident to arrest. It was, as Your Honor pointed out earlier, the district court made a finding that the officers had probable cause to believe that they would find marijuana in the car based on the smell of marijuana. And so this is, and you'll see at the Supreme Court's decision, it's the slip opinion, page 13, the court specifically distinguishes and preserves United States versus Ross. And we would submit this is a United States versus Ross case because there was probable cause to suspect there would be contraband in the vehicle. But in any event, even under, I think it was Judge Randolph's question about assume that the vehicle is lawfully stopped, but then an arrest occurred when Mr. Quattlebaum was placed in handcuffs. Even under that view, we think Gant wouldn't require suppression because the offense of arrest under those circumstances would have been a drug offense because, again, with the dropping of the drugs on the ground, there's probable cause to arrest for drugs.
But if he was arrested just for a traffic offense, that would not justify it under Gant.
Right. That would squarely fall under the Gant rule. Right.
There's another twist to that. It's not involved in this case, but if the police are arresting somebody on the street who was driving a car and they take them away, the car, they don't just leave the car there. You know, they impound the car.
Right.
And when they impound the car, they take it back to the police lot, and then what happens?
And then they can...
They do an inventory search.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's the dilemma here, which is not mentioned in the Supreme Court's decision here, is that, fine, you know, we won't search it on the scene. We'll just wait. We'll tow it back to the police lot and do an inventory search. That's the problem that the Supreme Court's decision in Chadwick raised in 1977. Right. I remember because I argued and lost. So.
Right, and I don't think Your Honors need to go down that road because of it's undisputed at this point in this court that there was probable cause to search the once the truck is lawfully stopped. If you assume the truck is lawfully stopped, there was probable cause to search.
They have a lot of Gantt issues, though.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And finally, I would submit on the unlawful arrest issue. Again, this is an issue that wasn't preserved below because, in fact, you see at the oral argument on November 15th in the district court, Mr. Quattlebaum's counsel said, I wouldn't fault Sergeant Neal if he drew a weapon. The officers on the scene acted reasonably, or I think his words were understandably. It's a dangerous, traffic stops are very dangerous situations, and I'm not going to, you may be able to make a big deal about at what point was Mr. Quattlebaum arrested, but I'm not going to make a big deal of that. All of that invited the government and the district court effectively to assume that this wasn't an issue. I would say for all of those reasons, at the very best, your review on that issue would be for plain error. And certainly under, as Judge Kavanaugh was suggesting earlier, under Herring and Hudson, under any standard of review, we would even submit under a de novo standard of review, those cases would preclude suppression because there's no causation here. The traffic stop may have caused the finding of the evidence, but
Go ahead.
I was going to say the presumably unlawful manner of the traffic stop was not a causal.
Is there any amount of force that would transform a stop into a de facto arrest for these purposes?
Under a de novo standard, just under mm-hmm. under Lange and White, I think yes. I think it's just an objective test under those cases. It must be a sliding scale under those factors. What are the objective factors to believe that you're in danger? And what do you do in response to that? And I would think that you would escalate the amount of precautionary measures you would undertake based on how bad the circumstances are. And in this case, the most we know definitively from the record is that he handcuffed Mr. Quattlebaum. That's it. There's some suggestion in the record that Sergeant Neal drew his weapon, but that's not undisputed testimony, and the district court had no need to resolve that conflict in testimony. So for all of those reasons, we think the plain error doctrine, we think the waiver doctrine are both implicated.
How many officers on the scene for this failure to do a turn signal?
It was not for the failure to do a turn signal. They subjectively were conducting a by-bust operation, what they thought was a drug deal going down. What you know definitively from the record is that there...
12?
Sorry?
12?
We know definitively from the suppression transcript that there were at least 5 officers in at least 5 vehicles. But a number of
these
officers...
I thought it was 11 or 12 officers.
Well, Mr. Quattlebaum relies on trial testimony for that point, and Hicks, he's out of luck on any trial testimony because he didn't renew his motion at trial. But in any event, a number of the 11 that he cites, at least 3 of them were undercover and were not participating in the stop actively. We know Officer Durham and his partner, Carol Turner, were undercover and would not have approached the vehicle. And I think you'll see also Officer Ellerby... He was undercover as well. I think you get that from Lieutenant Wilkins's testimony.
Was the driver also handcuffed?
The driver was handcuffed by Officer Foltz, yes. So for all the reasons I've mentioned, I would respectfully ask this court to affirm what we think is the very thorough judgment of the district court declining to suppress evidence. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Your Honors, first, I would like to point out that this is an issue that the district court ruled on. This was an issue that was absolutely before them, and the purposes of the plain error rule are not in effect here. As to a couple of the government's points, first of all, counsel's statement up here before you and in his briefs as to the amounts of traffic that may or may not have been on the streets on a Friday afternoon is simply conclusory statements that under Illinois versus Gates will not rise to the level of probable cause required for the traffic stop in this case. The fact is that the government presented no evidence as to a necessary element of that regulation. In the absence of any evidence as to that necessary element, the court's ruling was error, and this court must overturn that ruling and remand the case for the evidence to be suppressed.
Further questions? Ms. Blackwood, thank you. You were appointed by the court for this case, and we appreciate your help very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Case is submitted.